Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 17 of the 2QB Experience. This is the Jameis Winston Experience, second-year quarterback, first-year podcast. My name is Greg Smith. I'm one of your hosts, at Greg Sauce on Twitter. On the line with me, your other host, Joshua Lake, at Lake2QBs. Josh, how you doing, my man?
Hey, I'm doing well. I am free for some real-life stress. Had a real draft this weekend. I'm all around just glad to be here.
It's the most glorious time of the year. We get to draft fantasy football, you know, as many times as we are willing and able. And I know that you and I both had our home league drafts over this past weekend, and I'd like to talk about that. So how did your draft go? Yours is an auction format. Tell me a little bit about it.
It is. Ours is a 10-team auction. It's a two-quarterback league. It's standard, so non-PPR. And this is our 10th draft as a two-quarterback league. We existed for 5 years before that. And it's a lot of fun. It is a whole lot of fun because we mandate that you be there in person. So we just get a bunch of guys together. Most of us known each other for about 15 years now. So lots of stories, lots of jokes, lots of drinking, giving each other hard times, just a good time. But it was a lot of fun to draft, and I will probably get into the teams. But I'm a huge fan of drafting live in person if you can at all make it happen.
Oh, nothing beats it. That's my favorite way to draft, and our league has slowly kind of trickled away from that, unfortunately, as people have moved out of my hometown area. And that's a very big goal for me next season, is to make sure that we can get as many people in the same place for the draft as possible. And I think we're gonna have to try for like a destination thing, like find a major city with, you know, an airport that everyone can get to easily, or just have everybody, you know, come home here to Santa Cruz and just mandate it. And if you can't do it, you're out of the league. So, everyone in my league who's listening to this, get your ass in gear, 'cause next year we're doing it live.
You've been warned.
That's right. Tell me a little bit about your team. We can compare. I had an auction draft over the weekend as well, kind of some of the prices, but it's a little skewed because mine is a keeper format, where, you know, you get last year's prices bumped up by $5. Now this is complete redraft, correct, for your league?
Yeah, ours is fully redrafted every single year, so there's no turnover. And I went in expecting, well, my draft plan was to hammer wide receiver to get two elite guys and then kind of see where the values went from there. And so it went to plan. I got Julio and AJ Green, cheaper than Antonio Brown and Odell Beckham had gone. And then after that, Lamar Miller I ended up with for, I want to say it was roughly 20% of the total budget. And I hadn't planned to pay that much for a running back, but I love Lamar Miller this year. And the fact that he was going at a price I liked, I just kept bidding. And so I ended up with those elite three. And then Le'Veon Bell came around, and he's going for far cheaper, and I dove in. So I ended up with those four elite players and then sat quietly through the auction for the next hour because I had very little money left.
Yeah, it's very easy to talk yourself into Le'Veon Bell if you already have another workhorse running back to kind of carry the load for those first few games, like you did in Miller. I'm actually looking at your team right now, and one of the things that jumps out to me is how little you spent at tight end. You drafted two tight ends and spent a total of $2. And both of these guys are injury risks. Tyler Eifert, Eric Ebron. We know that Eifert's probably going to miss some time. And Ebron is, you know, we don't really know what to expect from him. Can you tell us a little bit about your tight end strategy in an auction? Was this how you had planned to do it the whole time? Or are these just the guys you felt were the best values?
So I had a short list of four tight ends I was willing to pay up for at various prices: Gronk, Jordan Reed, Delanie Walker, and Greg Olsen. But just because I bought in early to those four elite players, I didn't have the money left to do it. So it was kind of an adapting on the fly thing. But this is a 10-team league. Only 12 tight ends are on our rosters total because we have very short benches. We only have five-man benches. And so I right now could go to waivers and pick up Zach Ertz, Jason Witten, Martellus Bennett, Dwayne Allen. There are a lot of good names on waivers. And so I wasn't too worried about it. I can stream the position if I need to. I really hadn't planned on picking up two, but Tyler Eifert was left till the very end of the draft. I was able to get him for $1. And so he's kind of a stash for me, hoping his injury doesn't take him too long. So it was a little bit of both. I didn't want to pay a lot for the position, but once I prioritized the other spots, I decided I wasn't going to pay anything at all.
Now, one place you're not really going to be able to stream as easily is at quarterback. I mean, we know that in two quarterback leagues, the QB position is highly valued, and your bench QBs are a little shaky, to put it politely. You have Blaine Gabbert and Trevor Siemian, the airman.
And Sal's boy.
Yeah, Sal's boy. Sal is the champion of Siemian for sure. And we just found out today that Semyon's going to start the third preseason game for the Broncos, which is often an indication that a player is going to get the starting nod at the beginning of the season. Now, we don't know that for sure with Siemian, but can you talk a little bit about, you know, some of the other QB options that may have been available to you? Did you think about trying to spend more to get a better QB3? Or are you just hoping that this combo of cheap options and Gabbert and Siemian will just carry you, you know, at least to start the year until you can make some waiver moves and maybe find some other options?
Yeah, they're bad. I am concerned about them for sure. I had literally no money left at the end. I made our final three $1 nominations back to back to back because no one else was left. I just had $1 for each bid. So Jared Goff was still available. Case Keenum was still available. But other than that, it was pretty well picked through. And so Trevor Siemian was just a play on the fact that I didn't draft a kicker or a defense, even though we're required to start them. And so Trevor Siemian and Blaine Gabbert, my hope is that between the two of them, one of them is named the week one starter and I can drop the other one.
Yeah, that's actually a good segue to my snake draft that took place on Saturday night after our auction. And I did the same thing with Siemian where I did not draft a kicker. Instead, I just drafted Siemian in the second to last round before I took my defense and said to myself, well, if he becomes the week one starter, then I have a fourth quarterback on my roster, and that's going to provide me some value in season, either through, you know, streaming or through trades. But, I mean, it's looking good at this point. Now I got to find someone else to drop. What the hell do I do?
Yeah, it kind of is amazing that this guy that was a late round pick that's not very good, that has almost no college history, and he could be the starting quarterback for the Super Bowl champions.
Yeah, what happens if both those guys win jobs? Are you still going to drop one of them?
I'll have to look at it more closely. I am very reticent to roster four quarterbacks when we only have five bench spots, so I would lean towards cutting one of them. But I will certainly have to think about it if they both become starters.
I don't want you to give away any strategy for any of your league mates who might be listening. I'm looking at you, Burger. But are you leaning one way or the other? Like, if they're both named starter, do you have a preference on which one you'd like to hold on the roster?
I think that I probably, not even having looked at schedules, I probably go Trevor Siemian. I like his weapons better. I think the offense will protect him. And the schedule for the 49ers is just dreadfully difficult for the beginning of the season. There's a real chance that Gabbert gets replaced at least temporarily by week four.
That's my concern with Siemian too, though, is that they have two other quarterbacks who could potentially usurp him. And I don't know, like, you have to think that Paxton Lynch is the eventual answer for them. And sure, it's probably going to come sometime this season. I feel like even with that bad schedule for the Niners, Gabbert probably has a slightly better chance at remaining the starter or starting more games than Siemian, but who knows? We've seen crazier things. Like, Tyrod Taylor wasn't supposed to be the Bills quarterback last year, and he played almost every game.
No, I think you're totally right. Like I said, I don't like either one. I'm not thrilled with my situation. But I think that if my personal read on it is that if Siemian wins the week one job, it's going to be hard for that team to turn to Mark Sanchez. I absolutely agree they'll go to Lynch at some point, whether it's this year or next. But I think if they choose to bench the veteran in favor of the young guys, they've made that decision, and it'll be hard for them to go his direction versus going to Lynch.
So just talking about your league in general, were there any picks that stood out to you, any like supreme values or interesting strategies that were employed by other drafters that you want to highlight?
Just like any auction, there were a few values that were just a result of the money that was already gone and these players fell. And Keenan Allen at $18, which is just shy of 10%, was just insane. It was $15 cheaper than the other receivers in his tier. And it was purely because he was the last in that tier to be drafted. It was very late in the day and just there wasn't much money left. And so that kind of cuts both ways, where it's a much lower dollar value, but it's a much higher percentage of the remaining budget. So I don't know that it's as much of a value as it looks when you're just looking at a spreadsheet at the end of the auction.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of these other numbers that jump out to me. Brandon Cooks for 16, Sammy Watkins for 18. So it seems like receivers might have been a little devalued across the board. What do you think about that?
Yeah, the elite guys went more expensive than they ever have, and because we're a standard league, so the PPR boost isn't there.
Ah, that makes sense.
And so we were over 25% for, or right at 25%, I should say, for the very elite wide receivers. But then after them, yeah, there was definitely a decrease. The two guys you named were like Allen. They went later in the draft, and so people didn't have as much money left. Kind of what we saw was the elite wide receivers went, and then once they were gone, we shifted our focus really to running backs and quarterbacks. So a lot of the money was thrown that direction.
Yeah, it seems like that's where most of the dollars went, because I'm looking at even more, receiver and tight end values. Jordan Reed for 10, Randall Cobb for 11. Crazy.
Yeah, the late round picks really, just like any auction, if you have money left, you find values. I want to circle back. You've got Trevor Siemian on your bench, and I just wanted to ask you, your bench in this snake draft is much deeper. I think you guys have 9 slots.
Yeah, we go really deep with the bench in this one.
Is he someone, are you going to keep him if he's not the week one starter, or what's your thought process?
Probably not, no. It's kind of down to the last two guys you see on that list. And just to kind of run down my bench, I've got Jay Cutler as my primary QB3, backing up Rivers and Flacco. And then I have Semien and Jared Cook were the last two guys I picked that weren't a defense. And one of those guys likely is going to get dropped for a kicker, before week one, because our league still uses kickers. But yeah, I mean, if Semien isn't named the week one starter, he'll be the easy decision for me. I don't really like carrying four quarterbacks unless I know they all have jobs, even with the deep bench. I could see a scenario where, one of my other guys gets hurt, and that's the guy I drop or put on IR and keep Semien around a little bit longer. But yeah, I mean, for me, I want the guys that I'm rostering to have value right now. And if Semien's not the week one starter, he doesn't have that value. So no, I wouldn't hold on to him if that was the case.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And I think we may have said it, but just these are both 10-team leagues, which obviously impacts your thoughts as far as the waiver wire goes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're always going to see some number of quarterbacks enter fantasy relevance through the waiver wire. And I'm okay if I miss on some of those guys, because I like to think that coming out of the draft with three, I'll generally be pretty well prepared at that position. And even if I'm not, I like to think that I'm a good enough drafter and, that I have enough value with the other positions that if I really get put in a tight spot that I could trade for a QB. That happened to me last year. Due to injuries and just kind of some general bye week issues, I had to trade for Tyrod Taylor in the middle of the season. And I gave up a lot to get him. I gave up Doug Martin, but it worked out fairly well. I mean, I really needed the QB, and Tyrod was pretty excellent from then on out.
That's kind of my experience in the 10-team leagues is you can usually find a trade partner because there's probably someone with four quarterbacks. There's probably multiple teams and they're willing to move one. Whereas in 12-teamers, it's harder to trade for a quarterback.
Yeah, definitely. They just have so much value in 12 teams that it can be hard to pony up that price of, a good wide receiver or running back just to get, some middle of the road QB, because they all tend to be necessary for the people who drafted them.
Right. So you mentioned it earlier. You did a snake draft after an auction, which is just insane to me. If there's any alcohol involved at all, I can't imagine. But the auction went beforehand. How did that go?
The auction went pretty well. As I talked about before, it's a keeper auction. You keep up to four players for last year's draft price or last year's fab amount spent on that player to pick them up, plus $5. So I was pretty stacked from the get-go. I have a lot of really good values dating back a couple of years. I was in on Odell Beckham, DeAndre Hopkins, and Dez Bryant all kind of before they were huge household names in terms of fantasy. So I have DeAndre at $12, Odell Beckham at $10. And this is a $260 cap. We have a larger budget here because of the deeper benches and the fact that it is 2 QB. We want to encourage spending in the auction. So I was really set up well in the beginning because I have elite talent at low prices, so I could afford to overspend. So I spent more than I normally would on quarterbacks. I bought Eli at 25, Tyrod at 24, backed them up with Ryan Fitzpatrick for only $6. And then I spent $55 on Zeke. He was my big buy. Everyone else was actually pretty reasonable, but I feel like I got kind of good values across the board. I tend to be a pretty patient auction drafter. I just, you know, wait till everybody spends a lot of their money, and then I just try to pick up the scraps on guys who I feel are undervalued. I ended up with a couple guys that I wouldn't normally draft, like Golden Tate and Doug Baldwin, because I was just making bids, kind of price enforcing, saying, "Yeah, well, if I get him at this dollar amount, I'll keep him there, or not keep him there, but I'll take that." Golden Tate at $11, Doug Baldwin at $15, and I don't really like either of those players a whole lot this year, but at those prices, I'm fine drafting them. I feel like my, especially when they're, you know, my wide receivers 4 and 5, this is, I mean, a pretty good spot to be in. I feel really well set up for the year in this draft.
Yeah, that's insane. I mean, Golden Tate, who should see a ton of targets in that offense because they just throw so much and it's moving to shorter throws. I mean, that's, what is that, like 4% of your total budget?
Yeah,
that's incredible. Yeah, you paid a lot for Zeke, but outside of that, you really seem to distribute the money pretty evenly. How much did you plan for that going in? Did you say, "I want to kind of fill out a deep roster," or do you similarly kind of play it by ear and see what you're going to do once you're there?
I was in an interesting spot because I had so much value in my keepers, especially a wide receiver, and that's usually the position where I want to overspend, kind of like you did in your auction. I think we're of the same mind there. But knowing that I had my three primary wide receiver slots locked up and that I only needed one more wide receiver to fill my flex, at least from a starting roster perspective, I kind of knew that I wanted to spend a little more heavily on running backs and quarterbacks than I normally do. And that's where some of the buys came in. I actually wish I would have spent more on another running back. Like, I spent a lot on Zeke. I spent $12 on Gio Bernard. And then it was only just cheap guys after that. I wish I had ponied up, you know, basically that Doug Baldwin pick. I wish that $15 had gone towards some other running back instead. I wish I would have locked up one more kind of very good running back. That's my biggest regret from this auction.
Yeah, I mean, you have two that are considered some of the best in the league with David Johnson and Ezekiel Elliott, but it falls off from there. But that kind of is the whole philosophy behind zero RB, is that, you know, you'll be able to find some players. There's going to be players we don't expect that hit waivers just because they were never drafted, and we only find out midway through the season they're valuable. So I don't think it's bad, even the way it played out.
No, I don't think so either. This was kind of, this is a result that I'm very, very happy with. I love this team. But I want to kind of circle back to what you were talking about with those wide receiver values, like Golden Tate at $11. This kind of jives with what we were just talking about with your auction as well. And I'm wondering if this is maybe an indication that something like zero RB in an auction, at least, may not be the way to go. It seems like the wide receiver position is so deep, and these auction values reflect that. With as much money that was spent, you know, early on the position, and you can still find these other guys like Golden Tate, Randall Cobb, you know, the guys we discussed from both leagues, going for cheaper values, does that maybe make you want to reevaluate your stance on wide receivers from a snake draft perspective?
I don't know that it does, but this year is certainly making everyone rethink their strategies, because wide receivers are treated so differently even than they have been in the recent years. We've continually seen wide receivers get more and more value, and it depends draft to draft. Like, ours being standard, running backs still went for a lot, but I don't know that anything has been shaken in me, that anything has changed drastically, but certainly we've seen some shifts for sure. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, my thought is kind of something that's always resonated with me, and I've never been one to adopt zero RB wholeheartedly. Like, I understand the method behind it, and I do believe that the strategy has a lot of merit. But when it comes to kind of overvaluing the wide receiver position blindly, like without looking at individual players and the context of where you have to draft those players to adhere to the strategy, I don't know. I feel like that the running backs are being undervalued this year, and especially the workhorse guys. Now, I mean, I say that, and of course, I paid $55 for Ezekiel Elliott. Adrian Peterson went for $45. Like, clearly, like, the top end guys are still very pricey, for good reason. But it does make me think that if the wide receivers are going cheaper in auctions, and there are still usable ones going later, like, you know, after round 5, round 6, round 7 in snake drafts, then, you know, maybe we need to reevaluate, you know, how we're strategizing position wise before a draft. I feel like a lot of the time we just say we're going to do something. And this is something I warn people against all the time when they ask for advice on the site, is don't lock yourself into any particular strategy or any particular player before the draft even starts. Like, there's no real point in that because you don't know what's going to happen in the draft. Like, you don't know what players are going to get nominated first in the auction. You don't know how much people are going to spend on those players. And as soon as one pick is made, that should totally shift the landscape of the rest of your draft. And the more and more I think about this kind of like holistic draft strategy idea, the more and more I come back to this idea that you really just kind of have to pick the right players or find the right values. And that's really hard. It's a really complicated, ever-changing landscape. And I mean, that's why I love fantasy, but I don't know, like finding a shortcut or trying to find a shortcut kind of seems like a waste of time to me. Not a waste of time. That's the wrong way to put it, but it kind of seems like you're overthinking it.
Yeah. I tend to go with those more general strategies, to be honest. And whether that's right or wrong, it's easy for me to keep a shortcut in mind when I'm drafting. It's very difficult for me to keep all of the specific names I like in mind. And spreadsheets can help with that, and lists can help with that. But, like, for instance, this auction, I went in saying I want two elite receivers, and the thought process was certainty, that I know the elite wide receivers have a very high 80% roughly odds of being a wide receiver one at the end of the year. And so I want that certainty with my high dollar picks. And then after that, I'll take the more risky guys and I'll fill out after that. But if I'm going to pay a lot, I want to know it's worth a lot. And the wide receiver drop off is very significant. Whereas quarterbacks that are also pretty certain, that's a much more gradual slope as you get to worse quarterbacks. So I was able to remember that going in and kind of keep with it versus all of the sleepers I like, the names I like. It's harder for me to keep those in mind when I'm an hour into a draft.
Yeah, and I think that's fine. I think it's good to have a plan when you go into a draft, but I don't think it's hard to have like a hardline plan, you know, something that you're never going to deviate, because that's when you're going to bite yourself in the ass.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Like, being willing to flex is absolutely necessary,
especially in an auction. And that's what I was saying, is like knowing kind of where I was at relative to my keepers. I knew when I went into the draft that I was going to buy one of those, you know, top three, top five remaining running backs. It happened to be Ezekiel Elliott, right? And I knew that I wanted to overspend, you know, for me at least, on quarterback. And I did that too. I don't know. That doesn't mean that like I wouldn't have shifted if like Eli Manning and Tyrod Taylor got bid up to some ridiculous amount. Like, I still feel like I paid fair value for them. Yeah, I don't know. It's tough. It's so hard to contextualize this stuff just talking it out or even writing it. That's why it's such a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, your late round quarterback stripes are shining through, and getting roughly the 10th and 15th quarterback is paying too much for quarterback.
Well, it's not just about that. It's about how much I paid for them in dollars. Like, I'd rather not spend that percentage of my budget on the quarterback position. But based on the position I was in, I was incentivized to do so, I feel like. It does make me wonder if I should have kind of taken that to more of an extreme. Like, I mentioned this with not getting, you know, a second elite or very good running back. I wonder if I should have just ponied up and tried to buy, you know, Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees instead of Eli Manning and Tyrod Taylor. But I don't know. We'll find out. So, yeah, I mean, it's super interesting. Like, I love the game theory behind all this, like trying to figure it out and find the strategies that do work, or what the right default stance is or plan is to go into a draft. But yeah, I do think that flexibility is super crucial. And I don't know, this kind of transitions a little bit into what we're going to call our main topic. I don't know how long we'll spend on this, but it's the idea of what does ADP mean, average draft position, and how we can apply it to actual drafts, because we see this a lot on the site, where we'll post a strategy article or we'll have a podcast and someone will take a look at our rankings or the ADP and say, well, no, this isn't indicative of two QB leagues. My two QB league is totally different. But Josh, can you talk a little bit about why that's kind of a silly argument to make when it comes to average draft position?
Yeah, nothing makes me more frustrated than the tweets, the comments that we get that say your ADP is wrong because my home league does not draft this way.
Oh, I'm sorry. is my home league not real enough for you?
I mean, it is astounding to me. Like, you can, with complete justification, say your ADP doesn't fit my league. Cool. I believe that. I think that's very common. but that's common for any list of ADP you get. But to say it's incorrect is absurd, whether it's our ADP or ESPN's or Fantasy Football Calculator or wherever, because it's based on real drafts, real people making real decisions. And so you can't say it's wrong. You have to look at it and say, why does mine differ? Or do we have more teams? Do we have less experienced owners? Do we have more experienced owners? Is it because it's real versus a mock draft? I mean, you can give reasons, but don't just say something is wrong. That's absurd. And there certainly is a lot of variation in two quarterback leagues. We know that. Our drafts have quarterbacks that tend to go late, partially because we preach that, partially because our mock drafts tend to have owners that are more savvy, that come from Twitter, that come from the more kind of engaged population. If you compare ours to Fantasy Football Calculator, who has two QB ADP, they have four quarterbacks in the top 10 picks. We have two, 1.5 to 2, depending on which month you've looked at. And so it definitely differs depending on who you have drafting. For us, we're at over 50 drafts that are being pulled into ADP now. Like, it's very reliable at this point. But we also have real people, not a knock on Fantasy Football Calculator, but they're using a lot of bots. Like, their data is to some degree circular because they are having bots that are drafting off their own ADP, kind of reinforcing where they're at. And so know where your data is coming from. Attack it based on that or based on your league's situation. Don't say it's wrong. That's absurd.
Yeah, I mean, to say that average draft position is wrong is that statement itself is wrong. And that just shows a fundamental misunderstanding of what the word average means and what average draft position indicates. Right. It's not rankings. It's not how quarterbacks and other players should fly off the board in a draft. It's an amalgamation of many different drafts, many different outcomes, and saying, okay, you know, this is what happens some of the time, or this is what's most likely to happen based upon the sample that we pulled. And if you and your league mates are not a part of that sample, then it's not going to drive anything in our ADP. So I guess all I'm saying is, like, instead of trying to attack what we've done, instead of trying to attack our ADP, our rankings, why not join the mock drafts instead and try to draft like you would in your regular league? See what happens. Prove us wrong. Prove to us that quarterbacks early is the way to win. All these mock drafts we're doing are best ball format. They're going to get played out best ball or over the season. And we're going to see which strategies tend to work out when it's all said and done. But the only way that you can be constructive and that you can add to, you know, the greater good, the greater fantasy football knowledge when it comes to 2QB and Superflex leagues is to become a part of that ADP, to introduce your own perspective, your own, you know, tendencies into the data. So rather than trying to tear us down, why not become a part of the community? You know, join in a mock draft, see what happens in a league that isn't like your own. And, you know, maybe you can take something away from that, right? You can take a lesson you learned in one of our mock drafts to say, oh, man, this guy waited until the third round and he got, you know, Drew Brees there. Well, why doesn't that happen in my league? Let me think about that. Well, maybe quarterbacks are overvalued in my league. Well, what next? And you can kind of take it from there and see if that works out for you. Now, maybe it won't. Like, we're not claiming to be, you know, the be-all, end-all of 2QB strategy. We're just telling you what we think works and why we think it works.
Yeah, it's all about the reasoning. Like, for us, for any other article you read, for any podcast you listen to the reasoning. Read the reasoning. Don't take the conclusions at face value. Look at why people are saying what they're saying and then decide if you agree with that reasoning. Don't just say I agree or disagree with the conclusion.
Yeah, and I mean, you did touch on this, but I want to reinforce the notion that part of the reason why our ADP does have quarterbacks lower is because we are the people hosting the drafts. We promote late round quarterback probably more than anyone else except for JJ Zacharyson and Denny Carter. And when we do that and people read it and it makes sense to them, they're going to try to draft that way. And that shows up in the results of the ADP. It's not dissimilar to, you know, how the rankings, the pre-draft rankings at ESPN or Yahoo or CBS or NFL.com affect the ADPs of each of those individual sites. Like, there's a reason that the ADP on ESPN is different than the ADP on Yahoo. We don't have one hive mind of all football rankings and football evaluations. Like, everyone brings their own perspective. Everyone is, you know, influenced by certain things while they're drafting. And typically that's research done by other people like us, like the folks at ESPN, like the folks at Yahoo, wherever else. And that's what informs their draft decisions. So if your league is super heavy on quarterbacks in the early rounds, what can I tell you? That's the way your league is, and you got to figure out how to, you know, beat that game. You have to figure out how to, you know, strategize in a way that lets you win under those circumstances. Maybe that's late round quarterback. How do you know it won't work? Have you tried it? That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think you and I are both in plenty of leagues that are not our norm. I'm in a work league that's like points per return yardage. It's one quarterback. It's 13 teams, which I've never heard of before. Like, if you're in a league, think about how to exploit the settings. Don't assume that your way that you've used in other leagues is the best approach.
Yeah, it reminds me of some of the articles I used to write over at the Fake Football. Like, I did the waiver wire article for a year there. And, you know, you get comments sometimes that would be like, oh, this waiver recommendation is stupid. He's not available in my league. Well, it's like, well, listen up, dude. Maybe this part of the article isn't for you, you know? Like, maybe this doesn't apply to your league, but it might apply to someone else's. Think about that. I don't know. It gets me a little fired up. That's why I wanted to bring it up. But enough of curmudgeon Greg and fired up Josh. Let's get to our QB spotlight. Let's get to Jameis Winston. We'll start, as we always do, with a prediction of the number of top 20 weeks he will post this season. Josh, what do you think?
I'm going to say it's about 10. I think he has more shaky weeks than he did last year, that he's not buoyed as much. Well, I'll stop explaining. I'm going to say 10.
Okay. Yeah, we got more to get into regarding that stuff, but 10 is a good guess. He had 13 last year and zero bust weeks, 0 weeks where he finished outside the top 24 at quarterback. I'm going to be there right with you. I'll say 10. I think that's a great number. Now, among those 10 top 20 finishes, how many do you think will be in the top 10? Do you think he gets more elite finishes this year? Last year, he only had 3.
I don't see a reason to think that he does. I would say it's going to be right around that. I think it's in that 2 to 4 range. So I'm confident saying it's going to be 3 again.
I'm going to go a little bit higher. I'm going to say 5. I do believe in Winston. I think that he has a few very key matchups. So we might as well start talking about this. Like, the Buccaneers' schedule is very strange. Overall, they have a very tough schedule to play this year. Weeks 1 through 12, they play Atlanta, not so bad, at Arizona, Los Angeles, Denver, Carolina. That's a brutal stretch right there. Then they have the bye week. They come back for San Francisco, Oakland, Atlanta again, Chicago, Kansas City, and Seattle. So there are those two kind of very tough stretches between weeks 2 and weeks 5, and then you know, those last 2 weeks before the fantasy playoffs against the Chiefs and the Seahawks. After that, weeks 13 through 16, they play at San Diego, New Orleans, at Dallas, and then at New Orleans. That is tasty. That is a very nice playoff schedule. And that's where I see, you know, most of those big weeks potentially coming. Not to say he couldn't filter in a few more, you know, against Atlanta, San Francisco, and, you know, maybe just a surprise week against one of those better defenses. But I think that he can get in the top 10 5 times this year.
Yeah, I think that's... it's fair. Looking at the schedule, we can pretty safely expect that New Orleans and Atlanta will be bad. And I am really concerned by that early schedule. Like you said, Arizona, the Rams, the Broncos, and the Panthers in 4 back-to-back weeks. That's going to be rough. And that's going into their bye. I wonder how Winston is going to look after 5 games, what we're going to be thinking of him. I think there's going to be a lot of really frustrated owners that have seen him struggle for the first 5 weeks, and people that are looking to move on. So it may be worth keeping in the back of our minds. The schedule gets better just because there may be sellers out there.
Yeah, absolutely. That might be the perfect time, like right after that Carolina matchup, heading into the bye. If you can afford to take on a QB who's not going to play for you that week, send out a trade offer. See if you can snag Winston at a discount and really mop up on that second half schedule where things lighten up. I think that in terms of how you draft Winston now, like I was generally high on him to start the year, and I do like him as a, you know, fantasy commodity. But man, that early schedule is really tough, and you don't want to fall behind in the standings in those early weeks because there is so much uncertainty from week to week in fantasy football. You want to start off as well as you can to basically give up weeks 1 through 5 or 1 through 6 with, you know, like an admission that Jameis probably isn't going to start that many weeks for you. That probably means you can't spend a very high pick on him either. But let's talk about some of the other aspects of this Buccaneers offense. Now, Mike Evans is a guy who kind of varies from analyst to analyst, but he's getting a lot of hype from certain people this offseason. You know, sometimes as high as the first round, sometimes he's a second round pick in a snake draft. What do you feel about Evans, Josh? Are you high on him? Are you kind of middle of the road?
Yeah, I'm kind of lukewarm. I'll draft him if he falls to me, but he's not a guy I'm going out of my way to target. I think he is talented. He's young. He is huge, which makes him a red zone threat. Winston is fine. The volume is low. Vincent Jackson is coming back. If ASJ looks to be decent, there could be some competition that could hurt him. So I see it on both sides. I'll draft him for sure. I'm not avoiding him, but I'm also not overpaying to pick up Evans.
Yeah, I think the outlook for Evans is a little bit better than Winston, if only because, you know, Winston, when he faces these tough defenses, that's probably going to lead to more turnovers. Whereas, you know, it's not like Mike Evans is going to fumble a whole lot more than, you know, any other player would. That's just not very typical. But one thing I like about Evans is that because the schedule is difficult, there's a good chance that Tampa Bay is going to be playing from behind. And generally, I don't think you want quarterbacks in that negative game script all that much. But I do think if you can get an elite wide receiver, an elite talent like Evans with a high market share in his offense, then that can, you know, pay big dividends. Even if the team is not winning, he might just post a lot of yardage just because he's getting force-fed targets.
So just with Winston, he had an amazing rookie season, and so people are drafting him expecting progress. I think that it's a little – the community is a little bit underrating the chance that he actually regresses from last year. His rushing touchdowns, he had 6 on only 54 attempts. Doubling his attempts puts him in the top 3, and that if we double his touchdowns, it'd be 12, which blows away what anyone did. And I just don't think that the touchdown efficiency is going to be quite there. He had an incredible 4,000-yard season, but he was not completing a high percentage of his passes either. I think there is room for regression in both passing yards and rushing touchdowns. And I don't know that we can say for sure he's going to be taking a step forward just because he's young. I think we have to look at it and say there were some sort of fluky exceptional facts last year, enough that it might balance out, and he might be roughly the same guy as he was last year. I don't think that we can automatically assume he is going to be an improved passer this year.
Yeah, I think we're going to see kind of regression in both regards. Like he's, like I stated earlier with the QB finish game, I think he's going to have more good weeks and more bad weeks. I think instead of having just that really steady average finish of QB 15 week to week, that he's going to, you know, be more of a roller coaster ride based on the schedule, based on the fact that he is still young and learning the NFL. I think it's fair to draft him as a part of a committee with that in mind, and specifically trying to target him in good matchups. And this is something that Sal has done a lot of work on in the past, where you can try to find different quarterbacks to cover different parts of your schedule through the regular season. And if you can line up a guy like Jameis, who does have a nice playoff schedule for those final weeks, that can be a really big advantage. But yeah, it can be tricky to navigate a draft and have that all work out. That's for sure. And that is where, you know, the safety net of, you know, an elite guy or a more reliable guy like, I don't know, Tony Romo or Philip Rivers, definitely means that like those guys have more value than Winston, because we don't have to worry about the ups and downs quite as much with those players.
You may be right. I do think it'll be a less consistent Winston that we see. I just right now am not quite as sold as you on the upside, just that he'll have as many good weeks. I do think he'll have some tougher weeks, largely because of the schedule, because he won't have the same buoyed rushing production in his bad weeks, just because it's not a reliable, consistent sort of thing. But I can see your point that he could easily do better than 3 top 10 finishes. And he has a weak enough division in those good games that we mentioned that it's very possible. It's certainly in his range of outcomes.
Yep. Anything else you got on Winston before we move on to some new articles at 2QBs?
I'll just say I like him. I am not as anti-Winston as I feel.
Sounds like
over the past 5 minutes. Just for the last few minutes, I've felt like I'm really anti-Winston. But I have a hard time ranking him well just because there are so many quarterbacks that are interesting to me. And it's kind of what we've always said, that that middle ground of whatever you call it, 12 to 25, you could shuffle them all around. And so it just reinforces what we've always said, that why pay up for one of them when you can just wait and see who falls to you.
Yep, and that jives with that committee approach that I was championing just a little while ago. I don't think you really necessarily want to care. Like, if you are targeting guys in that zone of quarterbacks, yeah, just take the best value and make it work. That's just kind of how late round quarterback, you know, plays out. Anyway, yeah, let's get into some of the new work over at the site, 2QBs.com, of course. The first is a piece by TJ Calkins, a guest post, and he has a profile of Aaron Rodgers plus Jordy Nelson and how the two of them over the years have, you know, really developed a lot of chemistry and what that means for fantasy. You should definitely check that out if you're interested in drafting either one of them, you know, Aaron Rodgers in the first couple rounds or Jordy Nelson in round three, round four, what have you. I'm curious as to your thoughts on Nelson specifically, Josh. I'm a little worried about his health after, you know, these, you know, one knee injury kind of leads to another knee injury. He's finally off the pup and practicing and all that good stuff, but he's a little bit older, a little long in the tooth. What do you think about Nelson? Are you as sketched out by him as I am?
Yeah, I think the health and then his age, just kind of wondering how he recovers from injuries, is a legitimate thing. I expect that Rodgers and the Packers bounce back and have a good season, and so I like Jordy Nelson fine. He's not in the elite category for me, but I'm not probably as worried as you are. I do think that if he's on the field playing, that he is going to be such a vital piece of a good offense that I'd be happy to have him on my team.
Yeah, I mean, I still have him ranked relatively high in terms of, like, being an elite wide receiver. I think I have him right behind T.Y. Hilton and Brandon Marshall at wide receiver 15 in my rankings. But, you know, if you look at, you know, consensus rankings, he's wide receiver 8. There's no way I'm paying that price, like, not with all the concerns I have. That's just crazy. It's crazy. The next piece we want to talk about is a draft video. This is a mock draft that featured myself and Sal Stefanelli and Jeff Dubont, another guest writer at the site. 10-team, 2QB, half-point PPR. Check out the video. If you like listening to me yammer on in these podcasts, you can listen to me yammer on video and, you know, watch me draft, watch the other guys draft. I'll be sure to link to the results in the show notes if you guys just want to check those out. But it went pretty well. Did you check out the results at all, Josh?
I have not gotten a chance to do it. I want to sit down and just watch the video and see it because I think it's a good way to take in content. But no, I haven't seen the results yet.
There's a really good spread of different, you know, strategies that got implemented. Jeff went for early round QB. He took Aaron Rodgers and Cam Newton in the first two rounds. A lot of studs and streaming approaches, a lot of late round QB guys. One team, you know, waited until the 9th and 10th round to take his quarterbacks. I kind of waited a little bit, but not too long. I went 6th round Tom Brady, 9th round Jameis Winston, and then backed them up with some later round guys as well. But yeah, check out the video. It's fun stuff. What else is new on the site that you've been enjoying, Josh?
Sal, as always, has been crushing it. He had a really interesting article that came out this week just looking at quarterback targets by their ADP. And what he did is just went round by round. So for a 10-team league, if your league matches ADP, kind of per our conversation earlier, what you can expect to find in each round and then how he feels about those quarterbacks and whether they're worth their price. I thought it was really good insight into kind of the intersection of price and talent and just how you should be evaluating what to do in each round. And then he has been doing a Things We Learned series since last season. And so he had another one just looking at preseason week 2 and some things we learned, particularly things that will be useful for 2 quarterback folks. So both of those are really good articles, which is no surprise. Sal always crushes it.
Yep, he's the GOAT for a reason. Next up is an article by Joe Siniscalchi. This is his QB Big Board update. Another good resource, just tiered rankings of the quarterback position. We really do a good job at the site of giving you a lot of different perspectives. Like, I have my rankings. Everyone, I think, on the site has redraft quarterback rankings on one of those pages. But Joe's big board goes a little deeper. He offers analysis on each one of the quarterbacks he ranks, so you don't want to miss that. And last up is a 2QB draft guide that Sal put together. It features work by everyone on the site, basically a good recap of what you can find, links to older articles that maybe got buried but still maybe relevant. Definitely check that out if you have a draft coming up and you want to kind of get just a general overview of what we as a site think about, you know, 2QB draft strategy. All right, Josh, you ready for a few Twitter questions?
Yeah, what do they got?
Okay, the first one comes up from MK Schoner. He asks, do you think the best strategy in Superflex is to grab your first QB within the first three rounds, then grab two or three unpopular guys later?
No.
Next question. Expand, please.
I don't think the first three rounds is any sort of given. I don't find myself loving the teams just if I say I have to get one of those early guys. I'm open to it, but I tend to think that waiting longer than that for the first quarterback is what's stronger. I have said a lot that I like the QB. I like my QB1 to come from the 8 to 12 tier because I find I can wait so long that it makes it worthwhile. Clearly the elite guys are better, but it's that price issue again. So no, I don't think that you have to take a first quarterback in the first three rounds.
Yeah, and it does depend on how your league drafts. It does depend on the size of your league. If you're talking about a 12-team league, you know, that QB 8 to 12 might have to come off the board in the third round. Sometimes leagues just play out that way. So if you're targeting that type of player and that's going to cost you a third round pick, then that jives with what Josh is saying. And I agree. I tend to think that you don't have to say you're going to get one within the first three rounds. That's, again, going back to what we talked about earlier. I don't like having hard mandates on my roster construction before the draft. But I do like that grab two or three unpopular guys later. I did that in my snake draft over the weekend. Joe Flacco and Jay Cutler, guys that I'm not high on by any means, but because the price was right, those are the guys I ended up with.
Right. And that's where your work with the startable QB percentage was so important. Just saying that if you get a guy in the top 25, you're probably fine. If you're waiting later than that, it's where it gets real dangerous.
Yeah, I did when I made those picks focus a little bit more on strength of schedule, and that's something that's been a little more heavy in my mind over the past week or two leading up to the draft prep, because I've been trying to find ways to differentiate between the quarterbacks that I want to draft in those later rounds. And based on talent, I think so many of these guys are so close that you kind of have to look to those secondary things, those tiebreaker type of things, like, oh, well, who do they play this year? And I'm very skeptical when it comes to strength of schedule, because a lot of stuff can change during the NFL season. You know, a lot of defenses are going to be better or worse than we think they are at this point in the preseason. That's just how it works. But, you know, if you think that two guys are close in value and you want to see, okay, how do I break that tie? I think, you know, looking at the schedule is a fine way to do that. What's next?
So next up is a question from Joshua Sun, saying, in a Superflex league, 4 points per passing touchdown, would you trade Ryan Tannehill for Ryan Fitzpatrick? Both Ryans. My other quarterbacks are Flacco and Cousins. So would you trade Ryan Tannehill for Fitzpatrick?
So first, a disclaimer. I don't know off the top of my head when these guys have bye weeks. I'm not sure if that matters. If you are in a, you know, a 12-team league and you want to make sure you have all your bye weeks covered, then that might inform this decision a little bit. After that disclaimer, I want to kind of have a little mini rant here. What does a trade like this do for anybody? Like, what's the point? These guys are very close in value. We know that. That's why the question is being asked. So why would you make that trade? Like, you had to have drafted Tannehill for a reason, right? I'm assuming that if you drafted Tannehill ahead of Fitzpatrick, then you had a reason to do that and you should keep Tannehill. Now, if someone drafted Ryan Fitzpatrick before you drafted Tannehill, and now that trade is being offered to you, then it comes down to which one you like better. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't like questions like this. Like, no offense, Joshua. I don't think it's an invalid question, because we can talk about which ones we have ranked higher and that can inform your decision. But like, quarterback for quarterback, that's not the type of trade I look to make in the first place. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I agree. Just the same position for same position isn't something I generally like, because it's a guarantee that someone loses. I would much rather find a trade where I'm giving up a strength to fill a weakness, and that applies in reverse for my trade partner. That is ideal, where you're making both teams better. You're not taking a gamble hoping the other one that's not on your roster is better. Because like you said, I think these two are very similar. We're assuming redraft here. I assume that, or I would rank them both very similarly. You've got two fine quarterbacks already on your roster. I don't really see what the point is. Like you said, you drafted for a reason. I don't know why you would just swap quarterbacks that are ranked roughly the same unless you feel confident the other one is better. But then why did your draft go the way it went? So I also don't love these sorts of trades.
Yeah, I mean, if it is a consideration where you're trying to find a guy with better bye week matchups than the other when you have Kirk Cousins and Jay Cutler, then yeah, sure, talk yourself into that. That's a fine reason. Just to answer the question kind of in the abstract, which one of these guys do you have ranked higher, Josh?
I've been going back and forth on them, honestly. Right now, I have Ryan Fitzpatrick a little higher, two spots higher. But I go back and forth. I think Fitzpatrick will probably regress. I think Tannehill is in a better offense with better weapons than he's had recently. To me, it's very, very close, and it would depend on what I'm looking for out of them.
Yeah, me too. I have them literally ranked back-to-back. I have Fitzpatrick at 19 and Tannehill at 20. So, I mean, I guess we both have Fitzpatrick higher, so the in-a-vacuum answer to your question, Joshua, is sure, Fitzpatrick is the guy we like a little bit more, but it's so close that it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And I'd be curious to why the trade was offered, who offered it, you know, all that good stuff before you make a decision. All right. Next question comes from John Proctor at John Proctor DFS. He asks, what is Dak Prescott's value in 2QB or Superflex Dynasty and also redraft? So make up your mind, John, Dynasty or redraft? Who plays in multiple leagues? Come on.
Dak is QB1, right? That's what I've gathered from preseason Twitter.
Yeah, Tony Romo is dead now, correct?
He died. I think they're cutting him along with Ezekiel Elliott because Alfred Morris and Dak Prescott looked
Alfred
so good.
Alfred Morris the GOAT. Man, that is kind of a hilarious preseason narrative, just everything that's going on with the Cowboys, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just it comes back to the don't overvalue what is going on now.
I have an embarrassing story about Dak Prescott's dynasty value.
You tell.
Well, this year, Josh, you invited me to play in your Groundhogs Dynasty League, and I drafted Dak Prescott late in that draft thinking, you know what? I am a little worried about Tony Romo's longevity at this point, so why not get Dak Prescott? He's a rookie. Anthony Amico wrote a great article about him, like pumping him up. I'll take Prescott. That sounds good.
Solid choice.
Yeah, it was a very good pick right before the preseason started. Decided to drop him for somebody else. And now this is happening. And of course, when I went to go re-add him, I didn't put in quite enough on the waiver budget, and someone else got Prescott out from under me. I stand by the decision. I dropped a quarterback when I'm pretty set at the position to pick up someone at a position where I felt like I needed more help. But, you know, with that said, I do regret it. Like it's, I stand by the decision. I wish I hadn't made it.
Yeah. I mean, this is one where, I mean, you can question whether dropping him or not is a good decision. That's separate, but you can't predict that someone as rough and as raw as Dak Prescott is going to come in and just blow the league away in his first two preseason games. That's not something people could have foresaw, because at this point, it's easy to, in hindsight, say you should have kept him and traded him for that position you were weak at. But a couple of weeks ago even, his value is nowhere near where it is now.
Well, and there are two key takeaways from what you just said. One is the word preseason. Like, this is not real football. We do not know that Dak Prescott is going to be this good when real NFL games start happening. He's playing against, you know, fake defenses and, you know, second, third string players a lot of the time. And the other takeaway, and this is a good lesson for me to learn, is that when it comes to Dynasty, I'm not quite as avid a trader as a lot of other people are in fantasy football. And that is to my detriment. I do need to get better at that. But that wasn't even my instinct for 1 second, was to think, oh, maybe I can trade Dak Prescott, because I don't know, that's not how my brain works when it comes to fantasy. Do you have issues with that at all, Josh, or are you an experienced and avid trader?
I trade probably too much. I like making moves and seeing what I can do. Sorry, there's a car alarm outside. I don't know if you're picking that up. That's obnoxious. I trade probably too much, and so I will make moves just to make moves and to show other teams in the league that I'm open for trading at all points in time. But I probably make too many moves in general, and so do end up cutting players before their value has really been set.
Yeah, my main issue is that I tend to overvalue the players. Like, I have a high opinion of my own opinion, so I tend to overvalue the guys that I have. And usually if I'm willing to cut a player, the opposite is true. Like, I think if I'm going to cut this guy, then, you know, if anyone else picks them up, then good for them, because they're not worth owning, right? So I tend to make most of my moves through the waiver wire, through ads and drops. And in this case, that that kind of bit me, and I'm going to have to learn from it. All right, so that does it for the Twitter questions. I got one other topic I kind of want to bring up and just pose to you, Josh, and this is an update that happened to the NFL's injury reporting rules. These have changed recently, and the probable tag is gone. But the bigger change beyond losing probable from the list of terms that they use is kind of an update to how the word questionable is interpreted. And it reads like this. If there is any question concerning a player's availability, he should be listed as questionable. That's kind of crazy. Like, that's going to make roster decisions even more nebulous than they already were. I mean, there are a lot of teams that kind of did this already, like the Patriots and the Seahawks. But what does this say to you in terms of your fantasy prep and how you're going to approach, you know, injury tags in the season, Josh?
I think it means I'm going to have to prioritize Sunday mornings more than I ever have, just as the news is breaking, to be available and be paying attention just so I don't miss something. So just making sure I am near a computer, the TV, whatever I'm going to use, just that I know to be checking.
And that's valuable DFS time right there, isn't it?
Right. So DFS is illegal in my state, so not a problem.
Ah, well, that's too bad for you. I'm not an avid DFS player, but I'm like you. Like, on Sunday mornings, I'm kind of glued to my computer chair and checking updates on my players and seeing, you know, if injuries to players I don't own might, you know, open up some opportunity for unowned players you can add. But yeah, you gotta definitely keep this in mind that, you know, things are going to be a little different when it comes to injury reports in 2016, and be ready for that once the season starts, because it's right around the corner.
Right. And that's one of the key things, is just when you pull up your roster and see a queue by the player, it doesn't mean nearly the same thing that it used to mean.
No, absolutely not. So it's going to come down to, you know, making the time to do a little bit more research week to week. It's really going to reward the players who are a little more dedicated to fantasy and to their teams in terms of, you know, figuring out beyond the little queue next to the name. What does that mean? Like, I'm going to go to Roto World. I'm going to go look at some beat reporter articles and figure out what's actually going on with these players. You know, you got to figure out, is this a real injury? And I don't know, that's going to be challenging. I'm kind of looking forward to it, though, as sick as that sounds.
Well, it gives an advantage to the people that can be available for those 2 hours before kickoff, for sure.
Yep. It's times like that I'm glad I do not have kids. I would say that. But with that said, that's all I've got for this episode. Josh, you got any final words before we wrap this Mammer Jammer up?
I do not think so. It's been a good episode. We got our ranting out. We get to talk about quarterbacks. It's a good day.
Well, speaking of ranting and all that stuff we mentioned with ADP earlier, I threw out a challenge to, you know, the naysayers to say, hey, come join our 2QB mocks and show us how it's done in your league. And if you want to join one of our mocks, you can do that. Yeah, just tweet at us at 2QBs on Twitter, or send us an email, 2QBs@gmail.com. Both those instances, you have to spell it out, TWOQBS. Get a hold of us. We'll get you in a mock draft. We're running them every Monday. I think those are going to start to wrap up soon, though, correct, Josh?
Yeah, we'll see what the interest level looks like, but it may be that next week is our final round of drafts, just because at some point people have finished all their real drafts and there's not much value in a mock.
Yeah, Labor Day tends to be the last weekend of a lot of drafting, so you know, that Monday before Labor Day weekend is when we'll probably host the last round of mocks, and it's a good way to get practice if you do draft later that week, even if you're only going through a few rounds before you get to your actual draft. And that, like we talked about, that is what drives the ADP on the site. So if you're seeing that ADP and you're wondering where it comes from, you want to be a part of it, hit us up. We'll get you involved. Also want to remind everybody to rate and review the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. You can find us on Podbean and Google Play as well, although I don't think you can rate us on those platforms. So maybe you can on Podbean. We're back to me just not knowing things. You can search us up and like us on Facebook. That would be much appreciated. And that does it. Thank you again, as always, for listening. We are the 2QB Experience. For Josh, at Lake2QBs. For myself, Greg Smith, at Greg Sauce. We are out of here. We'll catch you next time. Adios.